Welcome back, listeners. Chris Versace here, and normally I would say welcome to the AAP podcast, but as you've seen, there have been some changes at the Street. That's right, this is now the Street Pro podcast, fitting with the amalgamation of premium subscription products that have all been rolled into the new, far easier to navigate, far easier to see, same great insight, the Street Pro. So that means that each week we'll be sharing a podcast with you about observations that we're seeing in the market, in the economy. Perhaps it's about monetary policy, but from time to time, we will be sprinkling in comments and conversations tied to conversations we're having with companies, thought leaders. And today, I'm very happy to say that we're going to talk with a company that is right in the center of the housing market. And housing is a big part of the economy, given the multiplier effect that it has, but it's also one that people like myself are watching rather closely because of what may happen with interest rates at some point, maybe the middle of this year, maybe the second half of the year. That's right, I'm referring to the Fed embarking on a rate cutting cycle. So to discuss some of that, but more about the housing market and how they're positioned to prosper, please welcome Peter Jackson, CFO, Builders FirstSource, ticker symbol BLDR. Now, Peter, I got to say, I'm very happy I got that all out in one mouthful, and I appreciate you joining us today. Thank you so much. As we look to get started, I know a lot of people are familiar with housing in general, and that to them, that typically means, oh, Toll Brothers, D.R. Horton, for example, or maybe it's a local home builder, not just the public company home builders. But for those who are not familiar with the Builders FirstSource story, give us the 411, the who, what, where, and more importantly, the why.
Yeah, happy to do it. So, Chris, first of all, thank you for having me. It's a real pleasure to be here with you. I'm happy to be able to talk about Builders FirstSource. We have an exciting story, and I'm happy to be able to share it. You know, for those who aren't familiar with us, our story is one of partnering with home builders. We partner with all shapes and sizes, so certainly the big guys, like you mentioned, the Hortons and the Lennars of the world, all the way down to the small home builders. But our focus is very much on those professionals, the folks that are building both single family and new multifamily construction all over the country. We're in 43 states, 89 of the top 100 markets. We have over 570 locations around the country. So good coverage nationally. Like I mentioned, we sell to all the builders, but none of those builders represent more than probably 4 or 5% of what we do, which kind of gives an indication of how broad we are.
Is that four now, to five? Hey, Peter, let me just ask you real quick, because I heard that 4 to 5%. Just want to ask a quick clarification. Is that 4 to 5% of total revenue, or any one home builder is no more than 4 or 5% of revenue?
Any one home builder is no more than 4 or 5% of revenue. Yeah. I think we outlined the top 10 in our K is high teens, I think is where that lays out. Okay. But the story about us is really related to that new construction. It's about 80-85% of our total sales. We do some business in the repair and remodel space. We have a little bit of a DIY business and a small exposure to commercial in a couple of markets around the country. But the core of what we do is in that new construction world.
And is it predominantly single family?
It is. Yeah, we're about 70% single family, 70% of our revenue.
Okay. And from a geographic concentration, you know, we hear a lot of companies talking about the Sun Belt, you know, Texas. We're hearing a lot of folks talk about Florida for obvious reasons. And again, the demographic trends are favorable there. You know, jobs are being added there. That tends to be a driver for housing. How are you guys positioned from a geographic perspective?
Well, given our focus on starts, we're where you might expect. We're in those smile states, you know, very strong in the South. Our biggest and best markets are Texas, Florida, You know, the Southwest, maybe that Phoenix market, for example, and then up the Eastern Seaboard. So the Carolinas up through Virginia, but we're pretty much everywhere, but that those smile states are where we're strongest.
I wasn't aware you guys are in Virginia because I live in Northern Virginia. So, and I'm not going to tip my hand about that because I don't want to hear anything about a certain school system in books. So, but that's kind of where I am. So just generally speaking, you know, the housing market's kind of an interesting one. I think, you know, the single family housing starts aren't as robust as they had been a couple quarters ago. We're starting to see some upturn in mortgage applications. The latest weekly one came out. Mortgages below 7%. We started to see new mortgages tipping back up, which I think is a good leading indicator. But what are some of the things that you guys are watching? And just generally speaking, how do you assess the strength of your end market? And what are you guys seeing for 2024?
No, that's a great question. And it's something we continue to arm wrestle, right? There's no one easy metric to look at, given our footprint, how broad we are. We spend a lot of time looking at the individual regions, the individual markets. We run the business based on a basically low-level market focus, about 80 of them around the country. So you're going to get a very different reading when you speak to folks in Southern California versus Dallas or Orlando, for example. And that's how we do it, right? We spend time with our customers, both at the sales level and at the executive level, trying to get a sense of where they're headed. And then watch the broader environment. And the things you mentioned, it's mortgage rates, it's inflation. It's, you know, the broader sense of employment and customer confidence. That comes together in some of the analysis that we've done that gives us some confidence about 24. I think we've got a sense that while multifamily is likely to be a pretty significant headwind, we've got to digest some of the large scale building that's gone on in that space. We think that the single family market will be up probably in those mid single digits range and strengthening. That's been the encouraging part of what we've seen is demand has held up very, very well. Broad sense of people wanting to be in those new homes is sustained throughout all of the interest rate changes. It really is a battle on affordability. And I think the combination of us and the home builders finding ways to make houses more affordable wherever we can, or if you're a big builder buying down mortgage rates with, you know, some big actions they're making in their mortgage divisions has helped. But it's a struggle. It's certainly it's changed a lot in the last decade.
I agree. And it's funny, the first house I had outside of living with my parents, I think our mortgage rate was around 7.5%. And then moved and refinanced. And we're you know, hanging in around 3%. So it's mentally, it's very tough if we wanted to move to break that. At some point we will. I don't know that mortgage rates will ever get back down to that level. But there is this other aspect of affordability that's not just mortgage rates. It's the types of homes that have been built, the prices tied to those homes. I don't think I'm breaking any new ground when I would say Toll Brothers, high-end builder. You know, D.R. Horton, you know, kind of a little more affordable housing, or at least that's a good part of their mix. So when you talk about affordability, are you seeing anything in your business that would say, you know, these builders, they're starting to build, you know, lower priced homes, more affordable homes, not the higher end McMansion homes?
I think the averages are changing. Okay. There's still a fair appetite for all of the categories, and there's an argument to be made. And I think it's fair that the entry-level homes are the ones that have been hardest hit because the consumers have been hardest hit, right? Inflation's hit them the hardest. That disposable or discretionary component of their ability to buy a new home has been impaired the most with the cost of fuel or food. But I think that the reality is the builders are trying to build homes that are generally smaller. Right. It's, you know, I hate to use shrinkflation, but I would say more of a return to where we have been in the past. you know, we one of the things that frustrates me when I look at the data are the comments about median homes. Oh, median homes aren't affordable. Our median homes compared to what it was like in the 70s, and these horrible comparisons. But then you look at the size of the home, and it's 2,500 square feet versus 1,500 square feet, right? It's an apples to oranges type of comparison. So, so I think there's a return, right? There's a recognition. Look, we can do this better if we're a little tighter on the square footage.
Great. I agree with that. But there's also something, though, that you guys are doing that when I was getting ready for our conversation, it really spoke to me because, you know, I like a couple. There are certain attributes of companies that I really like. One is, you know, buy the bullets, but not the guns, where you're buying a key supplier that touches a number of different customers, as the case of you just mentioned with you guys and the home builders, particularly the top 10 largest. But the other thing I like to see is the ability to pick up share. And there are a couple ways to think about this. One is just generally speaking market share, but the other is kind of relating to content. Right. So if you'll let me step to the side for a second, when I look at like in the past, the mobile phone or the smartphone industry, there were certain chip companies that were gaining a lot of dollar share per phone. Right. So they could grow much faster than the industry. They could also survive a downturn much better. And when I think about that and what you guys are doing by moving into value added products, it seems to me that you're picking up more dollar share per home with certain customers. Right? That one should allow you to grow your top line faster. But it also means that, you know, when it turns down, as you're ramping that dollar content, you may not get hit as hard. Is that, am I on the right track here?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's the way we've thought about it till now, and I think it's been very successful for us as a company, is how do we partner with the home builder to make the process easier? You know, building a house, hundreds of thousands of variables, multiple trades, it's a challenge. And so if there are certain things we can do as a company to invest, most of the time in, you know, fixed costs, facilities, tools, equipment, particularly automation equipment for certain functions within the construction process, taking that work off the job site has allowed us to, I would say, move up the food chain in terms of how we're perceived as a partner for home builders, right? We're not just dropping lumber on the job site, we're helping to build it.
Right, right. And there in the past, I seem to recall that there were some home builders, maybe it was Toll, maybe it was NVR, where they were having some of their own factories build joists and things like that. So they could kind of address the logistical nightmare to build a home. It shouldn't take 9 months in some instances to build a home. I understand there's permitting and all this other stuff, weather, but it just seems like a very long period of time when you could overhaul the logistics, like I said, and really shrink that, which would be great for them. But I could also understand where, if you think of how the housing market works, you know, Envy, Horton, other home builders, they buy the land, they have the plans, and then they roll in the subcontractors to really build it, right? So it sounds like you're almost helping fulfill a different type of subcontractor role, but just on the material side.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it picks up some of the labor, which is a unique twist to it. NVR is a great example, right? They have invested in a lot of the fixed overhead that we're talking about and that we have done in the business in order to make themselves more efficient within a pretty narrow geographic area. They're growing, but their strength is certainly in that DC Northern Virginia corridor, where they've got great market penetration and an ability to really leverage that fixed cost that they've put on the ground. So we do the same thing, except when we put our facilities in, we serve all the builders. So if a builder were to finish up a community and move 20 miles further away, that could be a problem if you've got a facility that you're trying to ship from. Your freight penalty starts to really build on you. We don't generally suffer from that, right? Because we can partner with all the home builders, there's always someone who needs your services within that region. And getting the coverage that we have across the country creates that network of support where the builder does see us as an important part of, you know, facilitating ease, whether it be making the job site safer, making the build process or cycle time quicker, That's where we've been able to be really successful. And in many instances, builders have sold their businesses to us because of our scale, right? Because of the way we invest in it. We're pretty good at it, and it's not rocket science, but it's not easy either. So that's where they would rather give us the work to do, as long as we're, you know, fair and a good partner.
Well, you know, it's like you explained to people, like folks who are going into a new job, you know, you always want to make your boss or your customer look good. You also want to get folks who are going to help, you know, ease the burden of what you need to do. And it sounds like you're doing both. You know, without naming names, out of those top 10 public home builders, are you doing this type of work with all of them, or is there kind of ample room to continue to grow that business?
Well, I would say both. We do business with all of them somewhere in the country, no question. But according to our estimation, we have opportunity with share of wallet with all of them. You know, there are markets where historical relationships or maybe even capacity hasn't been what it's needed to be. And we constantly look for, you know, ways to invest and ways to build relationships and build partnerships over time. So it's been exciting. I would tell you that generally speaking, the large home builders are a bit more indexed to those types of value-added products than the smaller guys. Some of it has to do with the type of production build that some of them do. Others, they've just sat down and scratched out the math of why it's beneficial a little quicker.
Got it. And when we talk about this wallet share, what are some of the products that you guys have moved into? And to the extent you can, I understand you may not want to name specific types of products in the homes that you're targeting, but generally speaking, any hints you could give to where the investor can say, oh, I see what they're doing.
Sure. So I'll back up just for a second and then put it in context, right? So when we started 98, we were rolling up lumber yards primarily, right? Lumber and a little bit of truss. Roof trusses weren't really out as much. They weren't as well penetrated as they are today. So for those who aren't familiar, right, the roof truss is the triangle at the top of the house. It's generally difficult to do on the job site because you're standing up on the top of a roof. It's a little scary. The load-bearing aspect of a roof is a little unique, so you need to actually know what you're doing. You can't wing it. And when you do wing it, it usually involves putting a few extra boards up there, which is generally what we would consider to be waste. So our process utilizes technology. We've got truss design software. We use specifically engineered plates. And these roof trusses are built offsite in a facility that leverages automated saws, material movement, tables, presses, stackers, the whole family of automation to basically take cost out of the fabrication of that tricky part of the house. And then we deliver them to the job site. This creates benefit for the builder because they don't have as many framers required, right? So they can focus on the simpler parts of the house. It's safer. It's much quicker. There isn't a bunch of garbage lying around the website, the job site, because you're not cutting boards or creating sawdust and all that good stuff. So that kind of combination of factors allows both sides to derive benefit. The builder's happier, more efficient. We make a better margin than we would on a traditional 2x4 that would get delivered to a job site. And we've gone further down that path looking for ways to provide those services. So engineered lumber, it's a very technical part of the process. If you have these beautiful open floor plan type homes, you need big spans. So the specific lumber that you need, the engineered wood that you need to be successful at that without creaky floors or sagging ceilings, that's what we do for the builders, right? We're the subject matter experts. We'll help them design them. We also do things like doors. So we'll take a door slab that you might get from a familiar name, and we'll router out the hinges, put the doorknobs on, build the door frame, and then package them together so that when the carpenter shows up, they're not doing all that cutting and on the job site work. They can just put the door in the opening, balance it out, make sure it opens and closes properly, and move on to the next. So just very efficient work on the job site by those skilled trades that are hard for the builders to find and retain, being replaced by tooling and facilities and automation and process, right? So that's how we've been able to sort of move through. And we do that in a bunch of areas. We do window distribution. We do trim. So crown molding, floor molding, we'll utilize our skilled skilled site reviewers to go in, do all the measurements, have it all cut. So when the carpenter shows up, it's ease of doing business. So that's the type of thing we've moved into so far, but we've gone pretty far. So we've got a business in North Florida that does the whole shell of the house. In fact, we even pour the foundation because we want to make sure that it's precise enough to be able to handle the precision product that we're delivering, because we'll make wall panels. We'll do the whole wall of the house, stack them up like playing cards on a trailer, and deliver them to be stood up and put together. Attach the floor trusses, the roof trusses, close it in with sheathing, and we'll deliver a shell of a home to builders in North Florida.
So you're almost allowing them to be not home builders, home assemblers.
Yeah, but we're trying to look for the ways that we can support the builders, because a builder isn't going to differentiate their brand based on the frame of the structure, right? It's going to be the finish. It's going to be the design. That's all there still. We're just trying to make it easier by leveraging what we're good at.
No, totally agree. I mean, you know, I hate to make this comparison going back to mobile phones or smartphones, but that's what Apple does.
Right? I use that all the time. And I use it primarily when we talk about digital, but we'll get to that.
Okay, well, let's do that, because you know, not a lot of folks are thinking builders first source. Okay, I have an idea of what they're doing when it comes to homes, but you guys have made some noise about the digital offerings that you have, and I think strategically it fits with what you were just describing on that. Easing up the burden, if you will, of your customer, cutting down logistics, time to market, all these other things, reducing their pain points is how I would really characterize it. But don't let me steal your thunder. Talk to us about digital.
Happy to. We're excited about it. I mean, for context, we're not exactly known as an industry as cutting edge, right? The jokes from Caddyshack and lumberyards aside, this is an industry that McKinsey would argue is one of the least productive and least digitally sophisticated in all of industry.
Well, but it's understandable though, right? Because while we all tend to think about the large public home builders because we're investors, the housing market is still very fragmented. There are a number of guys and gals, you know, out there that build a handful of homes a year, right? They're not going to be investing in some of these things like we've just been talking about. And I think that's really what allows you, at least in that market, to really position yourself well.
That's exactly right. So even with the, I would say, significant amount of share that the large players have snatched up in the past couple of years because of their willingness to buy down mortgages, there's still only about half of the homes that are built. A lot of the homes in this country are still supported by those smaller regional and local players. So that's where we've focused. We made a big investment a few years ago in a company called Paradigm that historically had been really focused on window and door configuration. So if you go into your favorite big box home improvement retailer and ask for a window, you're probably using some Paradigm software to pick out that window and decide how big, which way does it turn, what type of e-glass would you like to use. And that's a surprisingly complex process. So we bought them under the idea, basically following this idea of how can we make the entire home configuration process easier. We utilized that technology and partnered them with the subject matter experts that we have at Builders First Source. So one of the things that we do today prior to the implementation of digital is what's called the takeoff for the home. It's effectively taking the plan from the architect and turning it into a bill of materials for the structural design of the home. Most home builders don't do that themselves. Most of them rely on people like us. So we have over 750 designers and estimators in our business. And we see over 350,000 plans a year that are used to come up with the list of product that needs to be delivered to the job site, right? Which is how we fulfill our customers' needs. Well, what we saw there was an opportunity to be much more efficient, right? Utilizing technology and tools, but also leveraging the expertise, because every market's a bit different, right? Building in Dallas has different regulations than building in Florida or California. Mm-hmm. And that local market expertise can be taught to a computer, but gosh, it's a big investment, right? It's a big process. And so starting out in that world, we've leveraged the technology of Paradigm and built out a very interesting, and I would say first of its kind in our industry, end-to-end platform. So starting with that estimating process, we've been able to take plans and turn them into a three-dimensional digital twin, something you can visualize, right? So you can show you can show the builder. Perhaps more importantly, you can show the home buyer, hey, this is what your home looks like. It, you can walk through it virtually. And most importantly, you can shop it, meaning, well, what would you like to have in your house?
Right,
and
right.
This is what it looks like when you've chosen it. So metal roof versus an asphalt roof, red versus black, siding, doors, windows, you name it. These are all things that you can modify and view, which maybe not that unique. There are players out there that can do estimating. There are players out there that can show you what things look like. Ours is actually shoppable, meaning it's connected to our SKUs, and builders and home buyers can use it to buy actual products with real prices and then deliver them to the job site.
So let me just make sure I understand this. So I can walk in, design my house, get leverage the expertise, see a, I'm suspecting, a high-end 3D rendering of the house.
That's right.
And then you can take that and say, this is the bill of materials. This is what we know we can build for you, builder. Send the order to your factories, have it get ready, and collapse the time.
That's right. You take out all of the queue times, all of the uncertainty. Everybody's on the same page. And then the powerful thing that is even beyond what we do and what we think is real value for the builder is now there's a central repository where there's one buildable, structurally designed plan. Right? This isn't just a pretty picture. This is the real plan. This is the master set that the carpenters and the plumbers will use to build the home. And because it's in a digital environment, everybody has the same version.
Right.
So when a change is made, right, then now you don't have conflicts with the plumber down the road or the HVAC tech down the road, and everybody can work together. We offer services that are, it's called Build Optimize, where you can actually go through the build process and find all the conflicts. In other words, take out those potential points where the plumbing and the electrical are in the same chase in the wall and can't be there, right? You can find that before the build happens. Our customers are really excited about that type of capability that comes out of this digital twin, and then being able to translate that down through. We've added a scheduling software. We know there's some scheduling software out there, quite good, no argument. But we're built in, meaning when the deliveries are scheduled, they pop up on the schedule. And you can put your subs in and have them sync up to the schedule. So now you know exactly when everybody's going to be there and can manage it more efficiently.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds to me like it's a lot better that a partner has developed this than some, I mean, let's call it, you know, Oracle or some other that doesn't really understand the nature of the industry.
That's right. They struggled. And some of the big players, you know, this has been in existence with the commercial developers for years. But the complexity that they built into it just doesn't apply to the single family home. We have complexity, but it's different. And so our focus has been really to keep it simple, focused on the user, Because builders have, you know, justifiable reluctance to some of the new technology, at least some of them. And our focus here is really just showing them the value that gets created. And we're able to do it, particularly for the smaller builders who don't have their own IT departments. Now, some of the big guys, they have some of this themselves, right? They don't need us to do it for them. But many of the smaller players, half the market, can't do this on their own. And they can't invest at the level we're investing to support them.
Right. I agree. Do you see a lot more consolidation happening among that 50% of the market that is not, you know, the large public home builders?
I think that it's inevitable that we'll see consolidation. I mean, we believe in scale. We think there's value that you can derive from it. I think the builders do too. But we work really well with both categories. And there are certain large builders that are actually kind of interested in what we're up to. We've put them off a little bit because we don't want them to hijack what we're working on. But they really like the capabilities that this tool represents.
Well, I mean, it allows you're allowing them to morph into kind of an asset-light business. You know, I mean that's I know that sounds counterintuitive, right? For a company that serves, building homes, but you're really enabling them to focus on, brand design and some of these other things that you alluded to earlier, by really picking up that pain. But I mean, I've got to think though that you're freeing up tremendous capital for them at the same time.
That's the hope. And giving the ability of folks that are truly good at what they do to be successful without having to be good IT people or without having to understand, three-dimensional design, right? In a technical environment. They're doing it in the real world. Let's give them the tools to make it easier on them.
And where just from an investment perspective, are you still harvesting on this now? Sorry, are you harvesting now on this? Are you still investing in these capabilities? And hang on before you give the answer. There's also the other part, I imagine that there's other businesses out there that you can fold into this as part of your value-added offering, right? So as I think about this, all the pieces are kind of coming together that, based on the work that you're doing on digital, you have a roadmap of what you want to build, and then you can go out and acquire it. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's fair. So the process that we've gone through so far, we acquired Paradigm in August of 21, and we've been building out the tool since. We rolled it out in a big way at IBS in Las Vegas about 2 weeks ago. So we rolled it out about a year ago on an MVP form, so the minimum viable product, the base model, found a bunch of things, as you might imagine, that we needed to improve, and proceeded to execute that over the last year. So the product is brand new in terms of what's being rolled out. We've got a big rollout plan that we're executing over the next year and a half, 2 years to move it into all the markets around the country. We've got some more functionality that we're adding. We're continuing to tweak it. But the idea is let's get it working and reliable and solid with the core BFS product portfolio today, right? There's some cool stuff that we think we can build in to add more and more basically integration with those value-added products that we've talked about. That's still a little bit separate, and we've got to integrate them more tightly. But then the idea is, okay, well, what other products could we put through this, right? We may want to own them. We may want to distribute for other people, right? There may be categories that, hey, we're never going to play there. Maybe we can find a good partner to be with us in the space. But that starting point of the shoppable digital twin, the real design, the structural design that the builders are using, that's a powerful place to start in terms of facilitating those conversations. So we're really focused on adoption today. But yeah, no, there's a multi-year roadmap around where we think we could take this if it goes like we expect.
And just devil's advocate, when you talk to some home builders, they might be like, I don't know, I'm not sure. What's some of the pushback that you get on this?
Well, I think the pushback is technology doesn't work for us. We tried X, Y, or Z. The Trio didn't work on the job site, so now I don't want to try this, right? Taking the Wayback Machine. Our ability to convince folks who've had challenges with tech in the past is one. The other is that it does require some administration, right? So if you have a builder who only wants to do James Hardie siding, great, but we're going to give you our entire portfolio. You're going to get our SKU inventory. So you're going to need to tell us that you only want to have James Hardie siding offered to your customers so that we can curate that for you or work with you to do it. So that type of knowledge about how to use the tool, that's kind of new. Comfort with an iPad, comfort with utilizing that type of tech on the job site. So the more tech savvy, the more tech eager of the group. I won't put any age categories
Yeah,
on
no,
those,
I get
but
it. I get it.
there are folks who love it and they're excited and they're all in. We have multiple builders who've already said, hey, I'm not building it any other way. Every one of our houses is going to utilize your portfolio of products because it's just better. So it's that balance of getting people comfortable with it and investing in it and candidly getting some of the subs to recognize that it's a better solution. No, I just do it myself. No, you're running into everyone else. You need to stop and work as a team.
No, but I'd like it though, because I mean, you're I won't say that you're controlling the entire framework, but you've by simplifying the process, you're winning them over, and then you can layer in your value-added products, and then you can really decide how much of the entire house you want to provide. But then you can have some preferred vendors that maybe you know, you can get some better pricing out of them.
And I think one thing that we're very clear on is, look, if you're going to put this much reliance on a core tool, we need to be a good steward here. We're not coming in and saying, well, you know, if you don't buy everything from us, we're going to shut you out or we're going to burn you down. That's not the game we're playing. It's more a matter of, look, we're in here for the long run. We think this is good for the industry. And we think that over time, you'll see the value and see the value of our partnership together and recognize some of the other things that we do right. And as that evolves, other partners will be able to be part of it as well. But we do keep the paradigm tool and the paradigm solution is a very separate part of our company because of that focus.
Okay. All right. So it sounds to me that my thinking was correct, that you have opportunities to grow in a slower housing market, maybe even a contracting housing market, by picking up share, because there always have to be homes built.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. And we're, as we talk about value add, looking at a lot of different areas that builders have pain points.
Yep.
And we have skill sets.
So is it fair to say that, like, I, you know, if someone were to pick up your latest investor relations presentation, which I would suggest that they do, because I think it lays the story out very well. There's a page in there where you would see like a number of, I would call them nip and tuck product acquisitions that have helped you build out your value product offering. Fair to say that anybody who's listening to this would probably or should think there could be more coming.
Yes, that is very fair. We have a history of acquisitions, some big, but many, many small tuck-in types that have been very successful. The nature of Builders FirstSource is to bring these folks into the family and sort of make them part of the whole, give them some of our tools, but benefit from their entrepreneurial spirit and their local market expertise. And doing that, that's certainly part of our go-forward strategy, M&A.
And I guess there would be at least two different buckets of acquisitions, right? One would be potential new products. Mm-hmm. But you did say something earlier about being located where the builders are. So it, you know, there might be an instance, for example, where you might have capacity for windows or doors or whatever. East Coast, boy, we need certain capacity for that type of products, or relatively close ones somewhere else in the country that we don't have yet. So it could be product or geographic expansion acquisitions.
That's exactly right. Yeah, we've got certain markets where we're pretty much everywhere, but a couple we aren't. And most places we'd love to be a little stronger. There's no place we wouldn't love to be a little stronger with a good acquisition. But a lot of that's been focused on value add. Those categories have been good to us, and we like grabbing those when they become available.
Okay. And you kind of skirted by it real quick, but I just wanted to bring it up. Have you guys described the margin differential between value-added products and, as I think, as you've said earlier, a regular piece of engineered wood? Mm.
Yeah. So if you think about the historical business, right, it's delivering 2x4s and primarily OSB to the job site versus a prefabricated offsite fabricated truss that gets delivered as well. In the past, we've talked about it as being 800 to 1,000 basis points higher gross margin between those two. So with the value add being that much better. Today, with all of the investments we've made, with all the productivity we've been able to capture in that space, it's quite a bit higher. We haven't updated that in a while, partly because we've had some displacement due to the supply chain disruptions and some of the volatility in commodity prices. But over the course of this next year, when that levels out, we should be able to provide some updated guidance. But suffice it to say, when we're doing value add work, we are absolutely capturing a pretty significant incremental gross margin associated with it. Some of it's just because of the cost of investment, right? You've got a depreciation to offset, but a lot of it is just captured efficiency.
And then just the way you think about the investment, you know, you talked about earlier how you kind of took the wraps off 2 weeks ago. You'll be bringing that out across all your major markets over the next 18 to 24 months. So just conceptually speaking, that would say by 2026 or so, you might have some other margin levers as that R&D, that investment comes down. Is that, again, conceptually, does that sound right?
Fair, although I would tell you our focus is on growing share with it. So not a cost play for us. One example of that is that we've got automation that's showing up in the estimating and takeoff process that I described. Utilizing technology means we can do it more quickly. Our goal here isn't to cut estimators and designers. Historically, they've been a bottleneck for us. So we'd love the idea of having more sales come through, right? Capturing more of our customers, either wallet share or new customers, particularly those that like the digital offer. So that's really our focus. We've put some goals out there. So $200 million of incremental sales in 2024, accumulating to $1 billion of incremental sales by 2026. So that's our target for ourselves. We're believers that this is going to really make a difference. And it's really time to put our money where our mouth is in terms of delivering on that starting in 2024 with this new release.
Okay. Yeah, and I was just going to say, just to clarify for the listener, right, we've talked about value-added products, digital, those numbers, the 200 million to a billion, that's digital.
That's digital. Yes. Thank you for clarifying.
No. I had to write it down too. So all right. Well, that I have to say, you know, I think anybody who is listening to our conversation today, Peter, is going to be surprised. I think that, you know, for the casual person who's been looking at the home building market, housing market, and wanted to know more about it, I think you're going to really open their eyes to what you guys are doing and how you may not say it, but I can kind of say it, helping revolutionize the home building industry. I think it's fascinating. I think it's exciting. It's a lot to digest. So I hope people will listen, if not once, maybe twice to our conversation, maybe reach out to Builders First Source to ask some questions, grab that investor relations presentation, do what I do, go to the SEC website and, you know, pull down the 10K and make sure you read up on it. But before we get out of here, Peter, was there anything else that we didn't talk about? I know we covered quite a bit. But any other one or two things that, you know, from your perspective, hey, this is what professional investors ask me. This is what you guys want to know or need to know, should know. Anything there?
Yeah, I think it's probably, and again, you mentioned the professional investor. And so this is maybe an insight in terms of how they think about us. Our free cash flow and the way that we put that capital to work, I think it's sometimes underestimated in terms of how important it is and how powerful it can be to our value. We generate a lot of cash, right? We're a distributor at our core. Even the value add work that we do is fairly asset light. So we generally are in the 2% of sales investment in CapEx on an annual basis. But given that we generate a free cash flow yield of double digits most years. And this year is a bit of a down year. We're only about $1.1 billion to $1.3 billion in free cash flow. We're going to have a lot of deployable capital. And we focus that on growth. We focus that on M&A that we talked about. We've had very successful shareholder returns from an M&A perspective. We've had really nice returns on our investments in growth, a lot of that in the value add space. And the remainder we've used where we haven't been able to put that money to work, generally because we are already buying all the production of the automation equipment from the major suppliers. We're already buying all the trucks we can get our hands on. In the way that we integrate our M&A, there's a threshold as to how much we feel comfortable with. We don't do bolt-ons as a conglomerate. We do integrations of those acquisitions that we make. So all of that comes with a pace. And when we have excess cash, we buy back shares. That's at the bottom of our list, right? So our top five, protect the balance sheet, invest in the core, invest in growth, do inorganic M&A, and then lastly, share buybacks. But that's been meaningful. You know, we've been, I think, good stewards with our cash and bought back over 40% of the outstanding shares of this company in the last few years, putting us at or near the top of the list for most public companies. And it's really been, I think, a good way for us to show the value and also our discipline and our stewardship.
Conviction as well.
Yes, sir.
So for 2024, is there any approved repurchase program that you guys are working with? How big is it? Anything like that?
Yeah, so the board at our last meeting in February reloaded our authorization. So we have $1 billion share repurchase authorization in place. And we'll, you know, continue to look for ways to move into the market opportunistically when we have cash available.
And is that a $1 billion over 2024, 2025?
It's open-ended. Okay. It's open-ended.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I, for one, am going to roll my sleeves back up on ticker symbol BLDR. I hope listeners at the Street Pro podcast, you do the same. I think this is a fascinating story. It touches so many of the things that I look for in companies that I'm really glad. CFO Peter Jackson, thank you so much for joining me today. And if folks want to learn more about Builders for Resource, there's obviously the website, but any other materials that you would say, boy, this really nails it?
No, I
see what I did there?
Nails it. That was well done. We've got some good material out there. I think the most recent investor package that our team put together is a nice summary that should get you started. Take a look at the base business analytic. I think that'll help you think about the commodity impact. But there's some good historical in there that should help as well. But thank you so much, Chris. I definitely appreciate the opportunity to chat with you today.
I appreciate it. I love these conversations. I look forward to doing more. And at some point, Peter, hopefully you'll come back and kind of update us on what's going on.
I'd love to.
Excellent. Excellent. All right, folks, that is our podcast for today. Thank you for listening. Please be sure to join us next week when we'll have another conversation to share with you, whether it's about the markets, the economy, or another, as I like to say, behind the scenes and in the know conversation. Thanks for listening.